Future Proof Gold from News Talk.
Okay, so what happened again?
So a couple of months back, myself and my girlfriend had a day out in Greystones. Beautiful sunny day, went to the local fancy restaurant, had a few drinks, was going home on the train, delighted with myself, when I got one of those phone calls that everybody dreads. Turned out my dad had a heart attack. A big one. He's okay now, but that was only due to a snap decision made by a complete stranger 25 years ago.
If you listen to the podcast, you might recognise that voice. It's Aidan McKelvey, the producer of Future Proof. We were talking about chance, and he told me this story.
So there are two brothers in Kerry, Ken and Declan. 25 years ago, Ken, completely out of the blue, decides, I'm not going to live in Kerry anymore, I'm going to move to Australia. So the reason I know this is because my sister married into this family. She married Ken and Declan's nephew. So 25 years later, Ken's brother Declan shows up completely unannounced at my sister's door. He wants to go visit his brother Ken in Australia. Needing somewhere to sleep before his early morning flight, Declan has selected the only house he knows near Dublin Airport. Her house. Why is this significant to me or to my family? My sister had plans. She had planned to go out to the cinema with my mother, leaving Dad at home alone watching the football. That was the night he had the heart attack. And the interesting thing about it is, even though it was a 90% blockage, the symptoms were mild. My dad is the type of guy who wouldn't make a fuss. He wasn't going to go. He wasn't going to go to the hospital. He had to be talked into it by my mother. And he had to be driven by my mother. So as my brother-in-law put it, had Kenneth not decided to go to Australia 25 years ago, Declan would not have decided to visit my sister on a whim. My sister would have gone to the cinema with my mother, leaving my father alone as he had his heart attack, which would have led to his death.
Yeah, I didn't get it either. To me, Aidan's story is just randomness. I don't know, it just seems arbitrary. Look, I'm delighted your dad as well, but I just don't see how the trip to Australia is in any way relevant. I mean, couldn't you say that about almost anything that happened up until the point that your dad nearly died of a heart attack? Couldn't you say, well, Ken and Declan were brothers. What if their mum only had one child? Or what if her mum didn't have any kids? Or what if cinemas hadn't been invented? Or, what if Australia hadn't been populated? You know, you're putting significance where significance shouldn't lie.
Yeah, but they're directly related to it. Like the decisions, it's like it's one step away from the thing that actually happens. And they undeniably now have a part in my father's life. We're not talking about like one bacteria goes into another bacteria 6 billion years ago and you have life. And without that, you wouldn't have this situation.
Really? I think that's the same thing. I don't know.
It's not the same thing. I don't know. It's different. I don't know why it's different, but it's different.
As human beings, we live in a world where meaning is king, and we see it even when it is quite plainly not there. And that's what this show is all about. But before we start, why is meaning so important to us? Well, because without it, we'd be paralysed.
Because life is so complicated, the stimuli that enter our brain are so complicated, that if we were unable to put a structure on that, if we were unable to attach a meaning or a significance to things, we would constantly be overwhelmed by all the information that's in our immediate environment.
This is Brian Hughes. He's a professor of psychology at NUI Galway.
Most of life is cyclical. Most of situations we encounter in different forms several times. If on each occasion we had to analyze from first principle all the elements of a situation, we wouldn't be able to function. So the most effective biological organisms will reproduce activities and behaviors and thought processes that they can apply repeatedly to common situations. And humans are just like that. We're highly evolved beings and our psychology is highly evolved. So our habits of attaching structure and making meaning, looking for signal in the noise, is a skill that we use to survive and reproduce and evolve.
We have evolved to turn energy of different wavelengths and frequencies into colours and sounds so that we can navigate the world better. We've put meaning where objectively there was none. And that's what Aidan did, I think, trying to figure out what happened to his dad. But every once in a while, we come across an occurrence that seems so unlikely, so unexpected, so improbable, that even if we don't believe in magic, religion, or destiny, it's hard not to see a signal in the noise.
There are, of course, many downsides, many costs to the misinterpretation of probabilities or the inability to calculate probabilities. When we fail to understand coincidences or understand the odds of something happening, we're likely to make decisions arising from that that are just grounded in error. Or we're likely to become fearful of something that shouldn't be feared. And there have been a number of legal cases of miscarriages of justice which actually revolved around a misinterpreted coincidence or a refusal to believe that a coincidence has actually happened. A particular case there is that of Sally Clark, a solicitor who was convicted in 1999 for murder on the basis that two of her babies had both died suddenly as infants.
Sally Clark, his wife, had been sent to prison for life when she was found guilty of murdering their two infant sons. But her conviction was later overturned when new evidence showed she couldn't have been responsible.
A paediatrician said in court that the chances of this happening through natural causes was close to zero, is 1 in 73 million, and that therefore Sally Clark must be a murderer. It was professors of statistics and academics, mathematicians and so on, who intervened ultimately and successfully lobbied for the release of Sally Clark and for the acquittal of Sally Clark on the basis that the odds were totally miscalculated and that these were well within the realms of coincidence and that a coincidence had simply happened. And indeed, the paediatrician concerned who testified was ultimately struck off and became a controversial figure because he had allowed his disbelief in coincidences to override his medical training.
It was what Professor Meadow said at the trial of solicitor Sally Clark that led to him being struck off by the General Medical Council. He'd argued that the chance of a double cot death in one family was 1 in 73 million, a statistic that was later disputed, but not before Sally Clark was sent to jail. Today's appeal court ruling found that Professor Meadow had made an honest mistake and that such expert witnesses should be immune from any legal consequences.
There can be real danger in the failure to understand the numbers. So we wanted to find stories of extreme coincidence and deconstruct them to see how unlikely these events really are. And so we asked you, the listeners, to send us your stories. And they were brilliant. But there were two in particular that stood out.
Yeah, my name's John McLean. I'm 41 years of age. I've been in the Republic of Ireland for 12 years. I really enjoy it here. In 2008, I decided to go to Manchester for the Glasgow Rangers versus Zenit St. Petersburg game in Manchester. I decided to meet my brother at Shannon Airport, who stays in Tuam, to go to the game as well. During that time, we met about six other Rangers fans that came out of the woodwork in Ireland. I didn't really think there was any other than my brother and I, but there seemed to be more. One guy turned up without his Rangers top on and then took it out of his bag at the airport as if he was going to be, you know, shackled if he was seen with it. And we met many people there, about six of them, who were also flying to Manchester that evening for the game. During that time, there was a certain gentleman who was sitting in front of me in the plane called Richard, and he was one of the gentlemen who went to see the game. And I particularly got on with Richard quite well because where we stayed, we being my wife and I in Scotland, in Perth, which is Central Highlands, Richard's father worked there, still lives there, and that was a big connection for both of us. He knew some people I knew and I knew some people he knew. And plus the fact that he was not too far, living not too far where I live in Tipperary. So all these connections made us swap numbers. He was the only person out of everyone that I swapped numbers with, and out of all the Scottish guys. And after we returned from Manchester, we're on that flight, swapped numbers, everyone said goodbye and went on a merry way. My wife and my four kids picked me up from the airport that evening, and children being children, they were very, very hungry. So my wife suggested, hey, look, why don't we go to McDonald's? And we went to McDonald's somewhere near Shannon, and we were there for maybe 45, 50 minutes. After McDonald's, we left and decided to go home, heading towards Limerick City. And it was the pathway at that time was the time before the motorway was built, so you actually had to go through Limerick City to get back onto the N24, heading for Tiptown, etc., down into South Tipperary. We decided to pull in at a garage just in the outskirts of Limerick City and fill the car because we were very low on diesel. And as we pulled away, a few minutes after leaving the garage, I noticed a black object in the middle of the road. Yeah, this was in quite a built-up area, and I thought, wow, what's that? So I said to my wife, just pull over. It was a wallet. So, as you do, I went through the wallet just to check to see if I could find any ID with the view of returning the wallet to the person who owned it. Very much to my surprise, as I went through the wallet, I found an ID. It was a work ID of a gentleman. And on closer inspection, it was the guy, Richard, from the plane, who was sitting in front of me. At that stage, I just couldn't believe it. Turned around and says to my wife, you're never going to believe this. This is the guy's wallet who was sitting in front of me in the plane. She went, what guy? I says, the guy, Richard, who was sitting, I was telling you, the guy from Dungarvan that I met, he was sitting in front of me in the plane. We swapped numbers. This is his wallet. Wow, what's the chances of that? And she just couldn't believe it. We were both absolutely flabbergasted. And I realised just how insane it would sound, me phoning this guy and telling him, look, I found your wallet here. I just thought to myself, hold on a second here. This guy's been sitting in front of me on a plane. I have then left the plane. I am then saying I found his wallet. It just seemed too much of a coincidence, too freaky, the whole thing. Anyway, there was a happy ending to this, as he decided to come up with his partner and his newborn daughter, and we had a lovely meal together, and I returned the wallet.
So a guy gets onto a plane, starts chatting by chance to a complete stranger who he gets on well with and swaps numbers. They both go their separate ways from the airport. Our guy stops and has a meal and then drives for 45 minutes and happens to fall across the same guy's wallet. What are the chances?
My name is Michael Salter Townsend. I'm an assistant professor in statistics in University College Dublin. I like coincidences because I feel that I do have a small amount more appreciation for how unlikely these things are.
How good are we at assessing probability, do you think? When you see people talking about lotto numbers and likelihoods of things happening, are we as humans good at guessing probability?
We're not. What we tend to do is to think about various bands. We think about something that's evens odds, we all appreciate that's a 50-50 chance. We all understand that. We have a good understanding of that. A 1 in 4, we're all pretty intuitive. We all have a pretty good understanding. When we get to below about 100 to 1, we just think that's all unlikely. So we equate a million to 1 and a billion to 1 as being much the same, even though they're off by a huge factor.
So Michael, how do we figure out the probability of something happening?
The interesting thing about this is we need to make a series of assumptions. One of the key things we need to do is we need to define what we mean by the question, the probability of that coincidence happening. So what we need to do is break our story down into the boring parts and the wow parts. And the chance of any sequence of events, if you put in enough detail, is vanishingly small. Millions, billions to one. There's no way that it's ever going to happen again, that exact same set of circumstances.
And so this is how we intuitively calculate the odds. We multiply the chances of John going to that Rangers game by the chances that he meets Richard and swaps numbers, by the chances that he uses that same petrol station, by the chances that he stops for a wallet, by the chances that that wallet is Richard's. And of course, when you do it like that, you get an astonishingly high number.
So we get about 1.2 million to 1 for that calculation.
1.2 million to 1. Like me, you might be thinking, that's a pretty big coincidence. But Michael says multiplying the odds like that is not the right way to think about probability.
In that story, I gave you what I would call the long odds. I gave you a series of odds on all those different events. And then I scaled them all up by assuming sort of independence of those events. But actually, we can tell a version of that story that's not interesting. If the story was just that John found a wallet somewhere, that's not a particularly interesting story. And it also takes into account automatically some other parts of the story. It takes into account that somebody must have lost the wallet. If John found a wallet, somebody must have lost it.
Right.
So we shouldn't really multiply the odds of John finding it with the odds of somebody losing it. Those two things are intrinsically related. It turns out that John is the kind of guy who is very curious, and it's not therefore that surprising to anyone who knows John that he found a wallet and that he was inquisitive enough to get his wife to stop the car and to get out and to check the wallet to see whose wallet this was. So that's the parts of the story that we can set to one side in terms of the probabilities, along with the exact time of day and how many chips they had in McDonald's and all those kinds of things that don't affect the wow factor of the story in any way.
And so this is how we look at the maths of coincidences. Everything up until the point that something unusual happens shouldn't be part of the equation.
It is a great story, and I definitely don't want to take away from the fact that this is a wow story. I heard this story and I also said, wow. And it had some great emotion in there. I was also concerned, as John was, that Richard would think that John had lifted his wallet. I can start off with one very high set of odds, what I might call the long odds of the story. And then I can begin to think about the parts of the story that I can remove and the parts of the story that I can reduce the numbers on through various ways. John finds a wallet, and now we want to know what's the chances that it was Richard who lost the wallet. So again, back of the envelope, I can do some calculations on that. I can think about the probability that Richard lost it, given that Richard was at that same service station. I can multiply that by the probability that Richard was in that service station, given that he did stop for fuel, and I can multiply that by the probability that Richard stopped. So that's a calculation that we can use to decompose a probability of three non-independent things which are actually conditionally dependent on each other. If we know that Richard stopped at this particular service station, and we assume that somebody must have lost the wallet coming out of this service station near which the wallet was found, then what I can do is just take the average number of customers in a service station and say if Richard was one of those, then he has a 1 in, say, 600 chance of being that particular customer that lost that wallet. Then I want to know what's the chance that Richard stopped in that particular service station, given that he did stop in a service station. Again, I can put in some very simple figures. In 2008, there were 1,027 service stations in Ireland. So Richard was going to stop at one of them. So let's say 1 in 1027 was the chance that Richard stopped in that particular service station. And then we need to say, well, what's the chances that Richard stopped? Now, he was going from Shannon to Dungarvan. So let's say, back of the envelope, let's say he had about a 50-50 chance that he had to fuel his car.
So the story as it stands in our minds is this amazing once in a million chance, literally once in 1.2 million. But that's not the whole story.
Exactly, that's not quite the whole story. But I'm going to bring those long odds again tumbling down by making some further assumptions. Because some of those calculations that I've put in, when you think about them just a little bit, they don't really add up. The biggest one is the biggest number I put in there was that 1 in 1,027 chance that Richard stopped in that particular service station. But that's not right, because Richard wasn't driving all around Ireland. We know that they were on the same flight, so they started at the same place. We also know that they had a common route further than the service station, based on where their ultimate destinations were. So instead of a 1 in 1,000 chance of stopping in that service station, It's probably more like 1 in 3.
Wow. Okay, so that slashes our odds. What else?
Exactly. We can bring it down again by thinking that they started off their journey, which had a common part of the route, also at the same time. So instead of 600 customers across the day that the service station had, given that John and his family stopped at McDonald's for chips, and presumably Richard either didn't stop or didn't stop for as long and therefore was ahead of him, wasn't ahead of him by much, we might say there was maybe 60-odd customers passing through that service station in that interim.
So where does that leave us, Michael?
What we have is about 360 to 1.
I'd say John tells this story every time he gets to a party. This is his party piece, almost certainly. And yet we have made it rather mundane in a way. So what really intrigues me about these coincidences stories is thinking about all of the near misses that we must have had but just didn't notice. Like, you know, we're in Thailand in a beach hut and we go to the bathroom and unbeknownst to us in the next stall is the first girlfriend we ever had. And you just miss them by 3 seconds. Or you give a fiver to a busker and unbeknownst to either of you, it's the fifth time that busker has had that fiver given to him that week. Do we know how many times this was a near miss story where John picks up a wallet and it belongs to a complete stranger and not Richard?
Yeah, we can certainly estimate that for John or for any given random person as being, you know, one minus the probability that it did happen.
Okay, so statistically, this story is amazing once in 360 times, but 359 other times, it's just a random person's name when John opens the wallet.
Exactly, but what's really fascinating is to think about the coincidences that would have happened but weren't observed. So you can find coincidence stories online where people sat next to a stranger on a train and they chatted with that stranger and they eventually realised that they were long lost first cousins. And actually that's surprisingly common in terms of a coincidence story because lots of people have lots of first cousins and they don't always know them. So this story actually happens with an interesting frequency and gets told because it is an interesting story. What's interesting is how often you sit on a train, how often do you talk to a stranger? Personally, not often. Mm. How many of those were a long lost first cousin? For me, maybe zero, but for many people who have long lost first cousins, they may well have sat next to them on a train at some point.
And many times, maybe every single day you sat beside a cousin that you didn't know for years and because
exactly.
You didn't have that information, it just wasn't a coincidence.
Exactly.
So when we think about the likelihood of that happening to John, it's astronomical in
yes.
some respect.
Yes.
But for it to happen to anyone, it becomes almost inevitable.
Exactly.
Wow. Try something for me. Take a coin out of your pocket. Flip it 10 times. What are the chances that every time it landed heads? Think about it. The answer is 2 to the power of 10, or 1 in 1024. Which means, of course, if you kept flipping your coin 10 times in a row, you'd probably get 10 heads once every 1024 attempts. But of course you might not. It is random, after all. Now, what are the chances of those same 10 flips coming out as heads, tails, tails, heads, tails, heads, tails, tails, heads? Well, the odds are, of course, exactly the same. Yet 10 heads to us feels like a miracle. Welcome back to Future Proof. I'm Jonathan McRae. We're doing something very different this week. We're looking at the mathematics of coincidences to try and find out how unlikely, really unlikely things are. We've enlisted the help of Michael Salter Townsend, a statistician and mathematician from UCD. You'll hear him give some rough estimations in this program, but just so you know, he put a huge amount of effort and research into figuring out the exact probability of something happening where he could, going as far as researching old phone books from the 1980s, petrol station maps, and census information to see how likely certain surnames are. And so he's going to use all of this information and his knowledge of statistics to try and figure out whether or not our stories from you, the listener, really are that unlikely. So, Amanda, in your own time, tell me your story.
Okay. Well, it was back in 1983. I was working for a very large accounting firm, and I was working in the premises department. And we needed some office chairs. So I rang our supplier of office chairs, which was a guy called Kevin Madden. So the phone was answered by a male.
Hello?
And I said,
hello? Is that Kevin?
And a very, very surprised voice said,
Amanda?
And it turned out the person I was speaking to was my then boyfriend, now husband, Kevin. Kevin Madden, the furniture supplier, had moved offices. His phone hadn't been moved yet. My husband's company had taken over his premises. My husband was down inspecting the premises before they moved in. The phone rang. He picked up the phone and I was the one on the other end of the line. So I didn't know where he was moving to. I knew they were doing an office move, but not where they were moving to. So I wouldn't have made any connection between the two premises. So that's what happened.
What do you think the likelihood of that happening is?
I wouldn't be able to do the maths, but I would have thought it was extremely unlikely. Probably the chances that he would have moved into that building, the chances of me ringing at the particular time as he walked in the door and answered the phone, and his name was Kevin. I mean, that was... So when I said Kevin to him, he was all the more astounded because he assumed I was purposely ringing him at this new premises. Every bond you break, every step
you take, I'll be watching you. What a brilliant story. And I could totally imagine the shock on Amanda and her husband's, or her now husband's face when they realised that they were on the phone to each other. That seems like a mad story to happen, given all of the numbers. Ruin it for me.
This is a fantastic story and it's not an easy one to ruin, as it turns out.
Wow.
So the interesting parts to that are, I think, threefold. First of all, that the husband is moving into this particular building. Secondly, that he's in that same office when Amanda calls. And thirdly, that his name is Kevin. So first of all, let's condition on the husband moving. If it turned out that we just had a story and the husband was also looking to move office, that's not part of our wow factor. So let's just park that for the moment and say he's moving. Now, the chances of him moving into that particular building, that's a function of the number of suitable buildings in Dublin. Now, his company has some overlap in the requirements that Kevin Madden's furniture supply company had. So ballpark, I'm going to say that at any one time in a city of Dublin size, there's probably about 50 buildings that are either vacant or about to become vacant that are suitable for that purpose. Now let's say that the move is in that month. Again, that's nothing wow about the story. So the building becomes free and the husband is also moving in that same month. He's got to move there on the same day for this sequence of events to happen. So let's put a number on that. Let's say there's about a 1 in 20 chance of that. That's about the number of working days in the month. So now we've got the husband moving into that same building, being there on the same day. It's unlikely, but from here on in, we're conditioning on that. We're saying that has already happened. He still needs to coincidentally have this first surname. He still needs to pick up that phone. We've got to say, what are the chances of those things happening and add those into our calculation. So it turns out the husband was there for about an hour inspecting the building and then Amanda called just once. So having an average working day and then saying that he probably doesn't start his working day going to that building, he probably needs some time to get to his current office and to get home via his current office. Let's say there's about a 1 in 5 chance that the particular hour that he's there is around the same time that Amanda calls that phone. Now we've got to condition on the one more thing, which is the probability that his name is Kevin. So what I found is that in 1966, there were 466 males registered with the name Kevin in Ireland out of about 32,000 males born that year. Now, if you were born in 1966, that only made you 17 in 1983, but I'm using that as a rough guide. So the chances of the man who answered the phone being called Kevin is about 0.015.
So put me out of my misery, Michael. What are the numbers? Is this a once-in-a-lifetime occurrence?
When we multiply up those sequence of events, what we get is about 344,000 to 1 odds of him picking up and saying hello to the name Kevin.
Amazing. So this is a pretty serious set of coincidences.
That's a fantastic set of coincidences. I find it hard to bring that further down in any obvious way.
You know, it's funny. Listening to Amanda's story, you might have thought, wow, they were just meant to be together. But Amanda doesn't see it that way. She just puts it down to pure chance. John, on the other hand, looks at things completely differently and felt what happened to him was destiny.
And I'm a Christian. I definitely believe in, as I say, God incidences. So like things can happen by chance. But believing that there's a bigger power there who like is outside the three continuums of space, time and matter, like I believe that things happen for a reason.
What we know for sure is that extraordinary coincidences do happen. But ironically, not as often as you might think. There were lots of supposedly improbable scenarios from you that really wouldn't stand up to a blow of wind mathematically. And yet, all of them were great stories.
So I was going out with this girl, Anya, at the time.
Disembarking from the ferry was...
You know, I'm quite a methodical person. Even when I was young, I was playing with Lego.
I couldn't believe it.
Together.
There was
it
my
was
friend John.
It was just spine-tingling to hear. Absolutely couldn't believe it.
The whole point of the show was to try and understand probability a bit better. Because probability informs your decisions. All kinds of decisions, like whether or not to break a red light, believe a story you read in the Daily Mail, or back an outsider in the Grand National. So it's useful to know that randomness sometimes doesn't look random. And every once in a while, lightning does strike twice. Whether or not you think that's a sign from God or pure fluke is up to you.
Chances are, 'cause I wear a silly grin the moment you come.
Chances was written by myself and Aidan McKelvey, produced by Aidan. I edited. Big thanks to our contributors, Brian Hughes, Michael Salter Townsend, John McLean, and Amanda O'Sullivan. Thanks also to all the other people who helped make this happen. Kate Mabbitt, Joan Byrne, Simon Keane, Joseph Yehuda Halpern, Neil Kavanagh, and Colm Hickey. And of course, to all of you who shared your stories of coincidences with us, we hope you enjoyed the piece.
Chances are you think my heart's yours.